You're listening to an ACCA podcast.
Laura, wow, what a journey you've taken us on this evening, underseas and overland and through the sky from France to Venice. And also what a voyage you yourself have undertaken to be with us here all this week in Melbourne for an exhibition that has now been 6 years of, you know, very kind of wonderful, at least in my experience, discussion over Zoom, on email and in fleeting moments in cities, including Paris, London, Venice, Brussels, Sydney and Melbourne. But now we have finally arrived and it's wonderful to have you here. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's begin firstly just by talking a little bit about the work that we've just seen, and then perhaps we can delve into some of the wider themes throughout your practice and how they might also lead towards the works that have been assembled together for the exhibition We Move In You, which opens at ACCA on Friday night. And it's really interesting to see Des Palais Idéal in a cinema setting, and what an enormous screen and with incredible sound, which of course is a very different experience from the Venice presentation, where it was shown as part of a very complex installation for which you totally reoriented people's experiences of the French pavilion in the Giardini. So we have some images behind us just rolling, which will help people who didn't see it in life just to get a sense of the kind of context of its original presentation. But it's a work, of course, that responded very directly to the city of Venice, to the context of the Biennale, and to the idea of a national pavilion specifically. So I wondered if you could begin by telling us a little bit about, I guess, the early conceptual ideas for the work, but also give us some of the sense of the journey that you went on to make it.
Yeah, it's really as many work, I think they often come from a moment in time. Obviously, it was pre-COVID, kind of idealistic moment, but also it comes from an invitation. I mean, when I got invited to do the pavilion, the subject became the invitation, kind of, or what is it to represent something, to represent a nation or something. But I felt at the time like I didn't live in France for a long time, and I didn't feel like this idea of identity having to belong to me, like when we talk later, the identity of, you know, I felt like I don't know. So it was interesting. I was like, what is it? What is it? Obviously, I come from somewhere. I have a certain upbringing or a certain, but also feeling the freedom to not belong, to cross frontiers, to break frontiers. But it became also a time to start to, I feel like, to feel each other, to feel, imagine a world without frontiers, kind of. But obviously it's an invitation, and you're very grateful to get it. It's an incredible situation to create, to invent, and to also exchange. So it was a lot of emotions, but it's also a chance to meet and collaborate, obviously. And so it was very much this idea. I wanted it to be extremely collaborative piece, bringing a musician, but also looking at the different people I went on a road trip. Could have been endless, and we all become a tentacle of a story and feeling. And so we started by doing an open call. I said, I want a priest, I want a teacher, I want a nudist, I want a dancer, I want a there's a radio presenter. There's just, but without being best, or you know, it's more about being just passionate with what we do. And so it was very much like a chance to feel each other. And so I guess that's how it started in some ways. And then I think it was a journey not so much just about nation, but the idea of creating. How do you create and feel each other? What is creation? So it was with a different sequence. The invitation came from Paris, So it was like, this is starting point, we start there. And then we go to the north of France, which was post-industrialization and where I grew up and I wanted to talk about filmmaking and the magic of it, like editing. Like, that's why this magic scene for me was like... So and then we go into Palais Ideal. For me, it was a place which is really about the pureness of the desire to create this post-Manwood, post-letters, and then collect stone and build this ideal palace. So really this moment where you also lose yourself in when you create or you invent. And so, yeah, but I mean, and then there's Marseille, and it's more, I think it could be anywhere, it didn't have to be in France, I think, but it was the invitation, but it's about trespassing frontiers, and that was a bit the beginning. Sorry, I went a bit far.
No, that's wonderful. I mean, I think there's inherently a sense of freedom in the work, as you've sort of articulated just there, which I think carries through so much of your practice. There's the transcending of borders, of course, but also just that freedom of the road trip, of being on the road with other people, seeing where that leads you, of flying, of swimming, of breaking into the Giardini, and, of course, that wonderful moment when the man leaps from the roof of the French Pavilion. And trespassing, as you've just mentioned, has also been, you know, the subject of previous exhibitions and works. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit maybe about where this desire for freedom or this desire to trespass comes from for you. I mean, even on a little, we went for a beautiful bushwalk yesterday and there was a fence prohibiting us from getting to the end of the point, and law suggested trespassing. So it's inherently in you as much as in your work.
I think it's full of you get a lot of adrenaline when you trespass, you know, and it has a sense of freedom of crossing, cutting system. And I guess when you create, you try to trespass constantly to arrive somewhere else and provoke something that you didn't know was there, or you create something you didn't even know you could touch. So you push elements or material or trespassing language, you put it upside down, cut it, reassemble it. And so it's this kind of feeling of but trespassing in many ways, like the Facteur Ideal, Facteur Cheval, who he was trespassing his own system, you know, he didn't have art education, he didn't have, and he created his grand palace art piece, which is visited by millions, and it's trespassing where you from, where you belong to, or, so I think it's, I think it's something, I'm always keen to keep that openness to. We should get a large brass band playing. They're coming. Don't worry, they're coming in a bit. But yes, it's really. I think it's a way of working. I think but it's, yeah, of course, for some people it's really hard to trespass. And I think that's why I wanted also the back door to be the only entrance. And it's not always the front door that you get in to places or countries and find ways around systems a little bit.
I think related to thinking about ideas of sort of liberation and transgression is perhaps the subject also of intuition. Because I think in your works there's very often a balance between an intuitive world of your own creation and perhaps a more rational or at least concrete reference to some of our kind of cultural and political histories and contexts. And I was just wondering what role intuition plays in the making of a work such as this one, and how much is sort of planned for you versus intuited in the process of making and also in the process of working with collaborators and what they bring to the work as well.
Yeah, I think it's so hard for me to. I mean, we planned sequences and where we would go, and I knew that sequence was about the magic of filmmaking. That sequence was about invitation and feeling each other and being the tentacles and the beginning in Paris. And so there's a kind of general sense, but not not everything is written. So I think a lot is on feeling the moment and the intuition of the moment, and but also quite a lot of texts were still kind of written. But it's the intuition of a moment, which place to do. I was thinking of something that I can't remember. Like, I think also when I get this kind of invitation, like, they're like, what are you going to do? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe we go on a road trip. And then the French, like, all the politicians are like, what the fuck? She doesn't have any idea what she's doing. And it's kind of like, she just, like, I actually don't really know. And the same with when I had the Max Mara Prize. So what do you want to do? I just want to do a grand tour, like, in the past and feeling the play. And I couldn't believe it gave it to me with a very little clear. So I hope, and I had a friend who was really good. He said, never ask for money talking about your next piece, but just talk about the piece you've just done and ask money for the next one about that. And usually it works, because sometimes it's so hard to articulate, and intuition comes into that. Now it's hard to articulate what you're trying to do. It could be a smell, it could be a touch, it could be... And I think they would have absolutely no idea how the piece would be exhibited, or the idea of this big sits. And it's also intuition, it's collage, it's feeling, it's things provoking each other. So it's, yeah, and all these senses are at once. You need to... And then also a lot of work, editing. That's when it's boring, and it's the best time.
That's the magic. Yeah, I do wonder as well, what did France make of it? You know, I think you've talked about, like, the politicians or the sponsors or the people who might be expecting something very planned, and they get something perhaps unexpected, but also that, you know, plays with them a little bit and plays with the context. What was the response?
Before it was funny. No, I'm a joker. but I think mostly, they were really annoying. the last few days, I decided that we absolutely needed a huge stairs right in the middle, in front of everything. I was like as you plan every detail for a year, and suddenly there's like... but no, at the same time, there's also support, but worries always were. I mean, we hear, we provoke, huh? And so there's always this tension between what has to be predicted. At the same time, is the pressure of being the best, and, like, you know, they want to show off. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It's a lot of tension, good and bad. I think you get invited to the Élysée, and you're like, ooh, and look, you're, but it's... So it's like the magic of a moment, and it's interesting, but it's, you look at it with some humor, but also, so the chance to be able to, because of systems in place as well, that you break after. But, yeah.
It is a wonderful scene with the drinks tray at the Élysée. I like that one a lot. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about language, which, of course, has been a defining concern throughout your practice. And in addition to playing with language as a form and the related potentials for both communication but also mistranslation, you very often use your voice, as you did with this work, to narrate your films, which has the effect of being intimate, familiar, enticing, and or sometimes conspiratorial. But at times it also makes us as the audience really kind of question perhaps the unreliable nature of our narrator. Can you talk a little bit about your own relationship to language and also maybe to spoken word, and how this has been both a subject of and a medium within your work?
Yeah. I think this was quite... I've worked with words a lot. I mean, I tackle them more than work with them. Like, there's a frustration. I think I got into art because I felt I couldn't articulate myself or have my thoughts well. So I think it was when I was like, with colours, with sound, with other things, I can articulate, use this language. And And then words start to come in a lot again. And the more I was, so when I arrived in London, I was quite young, and that distance of misgetting, misunderstanding, but also it opened a lot to the imagination. So it's my, by not getting it, or not, suddenly I saw the sea when someone told me to see, to all that they are. And then you sort of have a much more dense, it's like swallowing a color and density through words, and like so sort of in intensity. So I think it was very much we swallow words, and it was very it was really something. It became more and more this material to play with, like to cut, and as much as painting or clay or images together, like editing. So I think it became very much you should climb a few fence. But it's cutting this, it's a material. So it became a material, and here it was very much also like, I should include some French, which I didn't speak that much anymore because I was in London for a long time. But, I mean, I would have, obviously, but... So, and then it was really playing on this, all these sentences, French sentences. I remember going to the metro in Paris, and then someone was overlooking someone's text or someone, and then a person say, "Ah, mais occupez-vous de vos oignons," and it means take care of your own onions. And I'm like, okay, and then you look at it, it's like, where does this sentence come from? Take care of your onions, like take care of your own business, and this kind of all these sentences like grew from centuries of belonging or being together. And so there's a lot of I'm in the film, there's like je vais vous raconter des salades, I will tell you a lot of salads, which means I'll tell you a lot of bullshit. So it's like the whole film was punctuated with this sentence which gets translated into English or mistranslated again. So, and then the voices also, you get a few layers. So yeah, it's always been very dominant, I think, in the practice. But this was maybe more about two languages, obviously, also smell and many other languages, but it was really also about the language, the French language and English.
And what about sound more broadly? You mentioned yesterday, just kind of in a passing conversation, that sound might even be more of an important concern for you than images. Or at least how they come together, but the importance of sound and also music, which features very dominantly in your work. And sometimes I think they sort of sometimes appear like music videos in parts, you know, it's that kind of same sensibility. But what is your sort of relationship to sound and the critical role that it plays in your work?
I think I work almost more on the sound than on the images. It's like, it's for me, it has this subconscious, it's like... something that's and here was a really amazing sound. It's quite rare to have this incredible projection and sound system for the work, so it was really nice to hear it. But yeah, I think it's very much it's super central. It's like the heartbeat of the piece to me, and yeah, I think it's something you... I mean, it's like the politician, you need them still. They're like in the depth, and you need to work. It's really a dialogue between the image. It's really about the sound for me is really important, but it doesn't illustrate ever the image. So it's sort of adding a sourness or... It adds metal in your mouth, or it adds softness. So it's about bringing kind of taste, memories.
Yeah. It's a way in as well. It's quite a generous gesture sometimes, you know, or a rupture.
Yeah, can be and abrasive the pop, well. Pop songs are often, I write lyrics and I work with musicians and we try to create... This moment, like, yeah, I'm telling a story. Come along, come with me, and it's lovely, you know, like this beautiful music is catchy, and so I think it's playing on this moment where you're being, you being taken along, you know, without because it's not too hard, and then you get your eyes cut. So, but it's a way to sort of take you the to
and maybe a universal language too. That sharing of music transcending language in a way. We had on the way home from our bushwalk yesterday. It was quite a beautiful moment in the car, sharing music. You know, you were with Claire Lamb, an artist as well, who's here tonight, just sharing things you'd been listening to. And I think that transcends language and distance and difference as well. But there's also a lexicon of images that often reappear in your works over time, and many of them appear as subjects in the film that we have just seen. So there's the octopus, birds, technology, fruit, flowers, insects, and of course images directly relating to feminine subjectivity and experiences. So breasts, eggs, milk, a caressing hand, for example. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship towards this imagery, how you sort of collect it, use it, reuse it over time, and how it evolves and changes for you across various projects?
I think it's I feel I'm saying a lot of I. It's more I like the fact that I like the image as no, it's not so precious, or it's not, it doesn't have this one meaning, and an artwork as well, as it exists, but it keeps changing. You know, like you show this piece pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, in a completely different environment or setting. It keeps changing, and I think the image has the same. I like to. That it doesn't belong just to one story or one. So it's material that can be cut again and cut again and reassemble and re-question as well. So there's a lot of things I collect when we walk, and things they appear, and then maybe it's also sometimes really practical. I like voice and images. Let's use that one. I've got it on my drive, you know, but it then tells you a completely different story, and the voice is also something. It's also practical sometimes. It's a balance of. Questioning the image is something. Not to give it overvalue, I guess. I think
you know, sometimes for the viewer they can also be like kind of Easter eggs or clues. I think I'm always sort of seeing new things in your work. Every time I see them, even this screening tonight, I noticed a ceramic shoe that we placed in the gallery today in a very different context. Here it's placed on the cliffs in Marseille and it will reappear again at Acca as part of the show. It's nice to kind of, I think, draw perplexing links for the audience as well, you know, create their own meanings between works that you might not necessarily have intended either.
And it's also that it's all this one a body of work. It's organic. It talks to one another. I could do a film all about this big table, and at the end, the next film is just going to be about the tiny feet of the table, and that becomes a big thing. So it's all kind of forever connected. Yeah.
And there are, of course, repeated characters or protagonists throughout your work as well. And the exhibition We Move in You will take audiences really on a journey through roughly around the last decade of your practice. So the exhibition opens with Wanti, which was made in 2013, and concludes with Every Sunday Grandma from 2022, which we'll have a sneak peek at tonight as well. So it sort of moves from the subterranean to the sky, from the dark to the light, from history to her story, and from the main focal character of the grandfather towards that of the grandmother. So thinking specifically perhaps about just these two characters, can you perhaps talk about your own relationship towards grandpa or grandfather and grandmother, and how this has also shifted or evolved over time?
I love my grandfather. I think, and I loved, it's also about this moment, I think, history of art, which with a lot of grandfathers I grew up with. And I think it was John Latham, this artist I used to assist, was a kind of grandfather to me. And I sort of, I think it was really much the idea of representation of the artist. What at the beginning with Wanty was, what is the representation of the artist? What is society wants from the artist, and how is it used or taken or becomes alive for society? So how the artist is, his, what's his legacy, what's left, you know, Picasso's cars now, and John Latham wants to do this huge museum as his grandma, my grandma wants to open an enormous museum for my granddad, full of mirrors and big entrance, and like show off a bit, and this idea of what is left, and then make mugs to sell, or make what is the how you know how much you hold your what is it you've made? And that's, it was very interesting for me. It was a subject. How what is it this representation that society will take on? And I like the fact that you would lose control completely as an artist. You become, and your work is not yours. It's society. It belongs to whoever takes it and how. And I think with Grandad was really, and his last concept was to dig a tunnel. So my granddad lived in the north of England, and he was doing a lot of conceptual work. And his last concept was to dig a tunnel from the north of England to Africa without the authority to know about it. But he never came back. So he's been digging and digging. You should see his house. It's like full of mud everywhere. And my grandma's still staying in one sofa without any earth. But the Hobbs is covered of earth. So it's really muddy and messy. And so so it's a bit like he's, yeah. And now it's been years, 10 years. But he's been lost in the tunnel, so we keep calling for it. Sometimes I go down the tunnel and it's like, Granddad! I scream, it's all slimy. And so you hear this. It's just very quiet.
But now, now Grandma's free.
And then Grandma was like, it's my turn. So Grandma took, he did a lot of minimalist painting, black monochromes and... so she's been painting a lot of big boobs on it, and sunshine and bumps, and she's rearranged the studio, make it more interesting. So it's grandma's turn.
It's grandma's time. And grandmothers are also the subject of a really beautiful artist book that has been commissioned alongside the exhibition, and for which close to 100 fellow artists, writers, colleagues, family and friends have contributed a reflection on their grandmothers, some biological and others artistic forebears and inspirations. Because we all have many grandmothers who have informed and shaped us. And I wondered who some of the enlarged family of grandmothers are that might have influenced you.
Oh, it's just too many. but I have a little. I can read you the little poem, because that's from the book. I'll read you that's actually from a new film we shot in some cave, looking at... they call her the Venus of Willendorf, but she's more a figurine that was, that very famous Venus. And I was invited to do a project in Vienna, and it's where she's held. And I was really interested in looking at, it's just first the Venus, I think now we're trying to talk about her as a figurine. She also migrated a lot. She was, we know the stone is from Italy, and it moved, and this idea of she was passed from whatever pocket to other pockets and from generation to generation. And they found 130 of his sister Venus all around this part of the world. I don't know if we found some here, but it was staying a bit more that part, I think. And but it was a starting point at looking at her as this grandmother or a mother figure that would be very much cherished, I guess, or held and passed on. So 3,000 years ago, Grandma had walked far to arrive in Willendorf. We were 130 sisters. There she handed to Francine the needle to make her dream. Cecilia warmed us and got us full, while gathering decorated plates, Elizabeth repeated, Kizzy were lucky. Denise got us to feel connected and clean the ground of cigarette butts. Julia showed us how to make bubbles with her hands. Cathy reinvented one's history. Agnes was a glanus of images to be shared. Katya went as close as she could to the center of the earth. Maya went to university but had to stop when she got married. Felicia made us believe in magic. In magic with her love that sounded like love, love, love. Yoko filmed bottoms as speeches. All power to the people was Angelia's dream. Mary was working with radioactivity. People will never forget how to make them feel, Maya said. Catherine got scandals out to reach us. Florence improved hospital condition. Yoko climbed the highest peak of each continent, and Nina made me cry. That's a little poem which is in the book of women that might have feed me and us, that have passed stories and opened. My grandma asked me to clean cigarette butts mostly from the from the courtyard. But yeah, different. How all these? I think it's quite tricky to bring it to one or two. I feel it's this energy, big energy.
It's a flock, like a flock of grandmothers. Yeah. To end, we're going to screen a short film that will feature in the exhibition Every Sunday, Grandma. Before we do, Laura, though, I wondered if you wanted to provide just a little bit of context about the film, any form of introduction, if there's anything else that you would like to add to this conversation before we kind of collectively levitate towards the clouds.
Okay. So Grandma, I mean, that's her thing, you know, she likes on every Sunday, that's called Every Sunday. Every Sunday she asks my uncle to take her in a little plane to jump from it and she gets naked first and then she attached herself with a rope and jump and feel free and connect with the clouds and the birds and the. But you'll see that. I think Grandma, yeah, she just likes to be free. It was actually a piece I did some time ago as a tiny drawing, and then I was invited to do a show for the National Museum in Oslo. And I was when I arrived there, I was in the cloud, so I felt I wanted to. Also, it was during COVID, so there's this sense of being pulled down constantly, really down to earth. And I wanted that kind of creating this moment to breathe and to levitate a bit, to be above clouds and above human weights, and that also to let her. Yeah. So Grandma, yeah, she's became. But she often, I just have to do what she tells me to. So she's like, "You're gonna film me on Sunday," and so that's what happened.
Listen to Grandma; she knows best. Well, thank you, Laura, for your generosity tonight, and also just for the wonder of your work, which we're so excited to share with audiences when the exhibition opens from Friday. I'm aware that tonight we haven't had time for questions from the audience, but we'd really love for you all to join us on Sunday for a walkthrough of the exhibition with Laura. Saturday. Thank you. Yuck. I should know that more than you should.
I'm flying.
We're both flying, I think, at the moment. A walkthrough of the exhibition with Laura and Max Delaney and myself, which is a chance to kind of just, I guess, more informally and more intimately be in conversation with one another. So if thoughts have arisen or questions have come up for you all, please do join us on Saturday. So thank you, Laura. And for now, everyone, please enjoy Every Sunday, Grandma.
We have a tiny, tiny last little cheeky voice who wants to still say something. So there's one last voice. It's not very nice voice, but we'll finish on that. And we see you outside, maybe. This voice is a big lips above you. A big fat pink lips just hovering over you. Then it would go slowly on top of your head and kiss your forehead gently and lick you a little bit, lick your face. It would be above you, swallowing you, you know, the lips would be starting to be so big it would be, your body would be inside that mouth. You're almost inside the body of that voice. At the end of it all, the voice just goes, leave you on the floor like you're nothing.